I'm Mal Teely, President of the Vietnam Veterans Federation of South Australia. I'm here to tell you all about me and our organisation.
And we're looking forward to that, Mal. First off, let's have a look at your background. You were in the Royal Australian Air Force, the RAAF.
Yes, I certainly was. I spent 22 and a half years there in the Air Force. I joined as a 15-year-old as an apprentice and got out when I was 38. Because I thought, if I don't get out then, no one will want to know me after I'm aged 40 to get another job.
Well, we've leapt from apprentice to getting out of the Air Force. What did you do in between? You did an apprenticeship at first, so...
Yes, I started as an apprentice and got into, I suppose you'd call it core training, as the Army would refer to it, or we call it trade training, and that was as an armament apprentice, or as colloquially called, fondly called in the Air Force, a cracker stacker whacker. Now, it's like all services, there's all sorts of names for everybody. But yes, I started off as an apprentice and then I had a car accident, lost the sight of my eye and my right eye, and as such I had to change jobs or get out of the Air Force. I chose to change jobs and I changed and became a medical record administrator, or clerk medical as it was known then, and I spent the remainder of my life in the Air Force as a clerk medical, rising through the ranks to a warrant officer when I got out.
During that period of time, you also served in Malaya, in Butterworth.
Yes, from 1972 to 75, I spent my time at Butterworth as a single guy. I wasn't married at that stage. I thoroughly enjoyed my time up there. I spent a lot of time playing sport in my off times, off periods, and also worked on the radio station up there. At Radio RAAF Butterworth, as the call sign was. I read the news, did some sports shows, and did a couple of general announcing shows and some Saturday night requests and things like that. Yes, it was a bit of fun and something that I've always remember.
That was a voluntary role at Radio RAAF Butterworth, wasn't it? So
yes.
You did your normal job at your allotted hours and then...
Yes, you did your normal job. Come 5 o'clock, I was single, I'd just go back to the mess and, you know, just change, straight across to the radio station because I used to read the news and have to prepare for the news, the 6 o'clock news.
Communications weren't as intense as what they are now. Where did you actually source that news from?
We sourced it from Radio Australia. What actually happened was Radio Australia news was about 4 o'clock, was taped. And we had some ladies who were volunteers at the radio station, and they'd come in and type up the news from the Radio Australia broadcast. Then we'd have to come in and listen to it and also punctuate it, because they just type it as it was said. We then had to go through and punctuate it, because otherwise, if you didn't do that, you could get a completely different story to what was on there. We also had to vet it for any items that referred to Malaysia. We weren't allowed to do any news in relation to Malaysia. That was under the charter with Radio Malaysia, which was fondly referred to as Radio Malaria. But they had a number of different rules and regulations about what we could do and what we couldn't do, what we could play and what we couldn't play. Things like Puff the Magic Dragon was a banned song because it referred to drug culture or drug connotations it supposedly had. So, things like that. There were all sorts of things we had to make sure we didn't do, and that was part of the news too. You had to make sure nothing mentioned Malaysia in the news. Otherwise, you'd get a query from Radio Malaysia, because they used to tape everything. They recorded everything we did.
What was the biggest headline that came from Australia in your years?
Cyclone Tracy. I couldn't believe what I was reading and hearing, you know, on the news when I heard about Cyclone Tracy. And that was in January 75, and I'll never forget that as long as I live. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I think that was probably the biggest thing from a news perspective that I read while I was up there.
And Cyclone Tracy is the cyclone that hit on Christmas Day and it hit Darwin.
That's correct, yeah. The enormity of it and the descriptions that were being broadcast is just amazing. I just couldn't believe that Darwin could be like that. Having been to Darwin on numerous occasions for exercises or through flights and things like that, I just couldn't believe that that was indeed the case.
What was the reaction in Butterworth?
In Butterworth, I think it was just disbelief, quite frankly. People just couldn't believe. A lot of people had been to Darwin, had been through Darwin, had been posted to Darwin, and they just couldn't believe what they were hearing.
Most of Australia started taking up collections to assist the people of Darwin. Did a similar thing happen in Butterworth?
Yes, very much so. That's one thing about services, they're always collecting for different things. And this was a reason that everybody felt very deeply about, because it impacted not only the civilians, but all the servicemen that were there, Larrakia and places like that, and the RAF base at Darwin itself, it's no longer there. Well, it's still there at Darwin, but it's in a much reduced capacity now because it's moved down to Katherine, down at Tyndall. But in those days, it was all based at Darwin. So it was a very worthy cause for everyone to do. And so they started having social nights and raffles and all sorts of things were being done during the day by the wives and after hours with the guys who were working. Right. So it was really interesting.
And of course, those troops in Darwin itself, they wouldn't have been there by themselves. There would have been many families.
Very much so. They were nearly all supported, other than the single guys. They were all accompanied. All the married people were accompanied. So yes, there would have been a lot of married service people up there.
Back to Radio RAAF Butterworth. How many of you were there during your time?
I couldn't really give you a definitive answer on that one. I know that there were different people who did different jobs. Like there was a lot of ladies did voluntary work, typing and things like that.
When you say ladies, where did they come from?
They were the wives of servicemen, because if you were married and got posted to Butterworth, your wife and family accompanied you. So they were living in married quarters off the base. Over in Penang, the island, there was like a RAF club. And a lot of the ladies there, they used to organise all sorts of things, you know, all sorts of squash, badminton, netball, all those sorts of things, tennis, had all these different competitions that they had, as did the guys, for football, rugby league, rugby union, cricket, and all that sort of thing. So all those groups and those clubs didn't get together, but they all did their own things and raised money. And I don't know exactly how much it totaled, but it was a fair bit because I left shortly after there. I left in January 75, so I didn't get to see all the total of the money that was actually raised. So
I'm sure it would have been put to good use. So you left Butterworth, came back to Australia. Into what role?
I went back to 6 RAF Hospital. I was at 4 RAF Hospital in Butterworth, and I went back to 6 RAF Hospital, which is at Laverton. And I was there for about 2 years, got promoted and then got posted to Canberra, to Department of Defence, to what they call the Director General Air Force Health Services, who were located over in Manuka in Endeavour House. And then we moved about 12 months later over to Campbell Park offices, and that's where we remain, and we're still there today. When I say we...
Just not you.
Yeah, just not me, but Director General Air Force Health is still there.
Well, you had a long career in the Air Force. What was your favourite role during that period?
When I left Canberra, I actually got posted to Wagga, and I taught new Clark Medicals for about 4 years. That was a very interesting time. And after that, I got posted to operational command at Penrith, near Glenside, up in the Blue Mountains, which was a really, really great posting and involved travelling around as, I suppose you'd call it an internal auditor, going around checking on different bases and making sure they were doing the right thing by the Air Force and things in accordance with all the rules and regulations. I've had a fairly interesting service career in that when I was at Canberra, I was involved with policy development, and that was a lot of fun. That's where your knowledge and your experience came to bear in you trying to write policies that everybody could understand and work with. When I was at Wagga, I went from writing policies to teaching them. And when I got to Glenbrook, or Operational Command, I actually looked at the list of Clark Medicals we had. We only had something like 65 in the Air Force, or 69, I think it was, 69 total. That was from warrant officer down to airman. And I looked at the list and I trained 56 of them.
Oh, goodness.
So 56 out of the 69 I'd trained. It was an interesting time.
And now at that stage you were in Ops Command and you were actually going out to these various bases and auditing them.
Yes.
How did your trainees stack up?
They did. They did very well, actually. And I think one other thing is if you got knowledge of the actual policy itself from a first-hand knowledge, and then you're teaching it to receptive students, you can't help but get a good result. I always got on well with my students, and hopefully they got on well with me. But I always look fondly back on those course photos and see all those young, shining faces. I'll just diverge for a little bit. It was a long weekend. I'm in Wagga. I've got a course. There's a long weekend coming up. And I was just asking the students to look after themselves, drive carefully, because I want to see you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed back here on Tuesday morning. Because they were all going to head off all directions, north, south, east and west from Wagga for the long weekend. And then when I finished my little spiel, one of the guys in the class said, oh, flight, What are the Wrinkleys going to do this weekend? And I looked at him and I thought, geez, I'm only 30. And I'm a Wrinkley already. I thought, God, that just goes to show you, students, they always come out with something that you're not expecting. And I've never forgotten that term, Wrinkley. I use it quite frequently now. So
now you may qualify for the title.
I very much do.
Now, that job with Ops Command would have taken you all over Australia, not just New South Wales. How did that reflect on your family? Did you have a family at the time?
Yes, I was married by then. I was actually married when I was at Wagga. My first married posting was to Operational Command. Initially, it was great. I loved it. I loved the idea of every month you spend 7 to 10 days away out at another base, checking things out, writing reports and things like that. And I had no problems with that. But when I came home with a young family and with my youngest being about 2 at the time, it was very difficult because she didn't want to know me when I got home. She just looked at me as if to say, who are you? And by the time you got back into the good books with her, we were off on another trip. So that was the one downer about that job, even though it was probably the best job I ever had in the Air Force. I loved the job, but I didn't like the sort of the consequences, so to speak, when I got home.
So you had some jobs during your period in the Air Force that you really enjoyed. Why did you get out of the Air Force?
Well, I got out because my mother was very ill. She was suffering from cancer. She'd just been diagnosed with cancer again and was given 12 months to live. And I thought to myself, I was toying with the idea of getting out anyway, but it just made up my mind to get out because I thought if I'm going to get out, I had to get out before I was 40. Otherwise, nobody would want to know me from a job perspective. So I decided at that time I'd spent more time in the Air Force than I had out of the Air Force, having joined at 15 as an apprentice. So I decided that I would get out and spend some time with Mum before she passed, and that's exactly what I did.
Did you have trouble getting a civilian job?
No, luckily I was very lucky because one of my students who I taught had got out. He was doing a health information job at St. Andrew's Hospital. And incidentally, his name was Mal as well, Mal Brin. When he heard that I was getting out, he sent me a list of all the medical record officers or health information managers, as they were called in the civilian world. He sent me a list of all them, their names and their addresses and where they worked. So I, having done my CV about 15 or 20 times, I'd gone over and over and over and trying to demystify it and get out all the jargon, the Air Force jargon out of it. I then sent out a copy of my CV to every one of those people. I only got a reply from 2. One of them just said, oh, we put it on file. We haven't got any vacancies at the moment. And another one came and they said, we haven't got a vacancy for a clerk, but we do have a vacancy for the manager of our client record department. And we believe with your qualifications, you fit the bill. And if you would like to apply for that, we'd love to have it. So I applied and I was successful and became the medical record manager at Glenside Hospital. That's how it all started. So I got out of the Air Force on the 15th of May and started on the 20th of May at Glenside.
Wow, great transition. You've also become the president of the Vietnam Veterans Federation here in South Australia. What is the federation and what do you do?
Well, the Federation is a body that looks after veterans of all conflicts. It began with Vietnam veterans, of course, hence the name Vietnam Veterans Federation. We were originally part of the Vietnam Veterans Association of Australia, the VVA, but there were some differences of opinion amongst some people about the direction that the VVA was going. And so a breakaway group or a splinter group was formed, and they decided to call themselves the VVF, the Federation, rather than the Association. What happened is that they were formed, and since that time they've been very actively pursuing with the politicians, and especially in Canberra, they're attending Senate inquiries, putting in reports and all sorts of things in support of veterans' entitlements, pensions and all that sort of thing, and fighting decreases in, and loss of these entitlements. We're very active. We're not politically active. We are active in relation to veterans' entitlements, but not as a political entity. We sit and talk with anyone from any persuasion politically and try and get the best result for our members.
Are you recognised by members of parliament, by politicians?
Yes and no. a lot of times they'll agree with what you're saying, but it doesn't translate to policy. And for whatever reason, they choose to ignore some of the things that we say, which is unfortunate. But then again, a lot of times they do agree with what we do, and it comes in not necessarily in the format that we had or we were pushing, but in an abbreviated form. But at least it's being done. Once it's in legislation, then you can actually get it amended and so on. It's just getting it to that legislation point. So, yeah, it's a very interesting thing. And yeah, I'm a national vice president as well as a state president of the VVF, so it's an interesting role.
Although you call the Vietnam Veterans Federation, do you welcome veterans from other conflicts?
Certainly do. We welcome anyone from any Australian Defence Force, whether it be the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, that's been in conflict, either as a member or an accredited civilian or as a dependent or a descendant of a dependent. So really, we encompass virtually anybody with a military background. The other thing that we do, our major role as the Federation, is in advocacy, pensions, welfare, that sort of thing, looking after the members, and we do a heck of a lot in relation to that. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Vietnam veteran, you're a Second World War veteran, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, Timor, whoever. We have a lot of people coming along to us to help them put in claims to DVA, and we have a very strong connection with the DVA because of that.
What about female veterans? Do you have any female veterans in your books?
We certainly do have. We also have a lot of dependent veterans. We're not solely a male-dominated area. We welcome anyone, and we welcome anyone, any dependents who wish to put their hand up and want to go on the committee or anything like that. We don't care. We've always got two or three ladies on our committee at any given time, and a committee of 10. Some of them like to come on, some don't. A lot of them attend the meetings, at committee meetings, but they don't want to go on the committee. But they will also give us their thoughts and considerations of any issue that come up at those meetings. We have a very broad-based committee as far as who's on the committee. We have ex-officers, we have ex-airmen, we have Army, Navy, civilians. It doesn't matter. We welcome them all.
Good to hear. Mal, you had a superb club rooms down at Warradale, but you had to relinquish that. Tell us about it.
Yes, unfortunately, we did have to relinquish that. Well, I was actually on holidays in New South Wales at the time and got a phone call from a vice president and said, we've been compulsorily acquired by DIPTI, by the government. And I thought, oh, what's going on here? And he said, it's in relation to the upgrade of the Oaklands Crossing. We always knew about the upgrade happening and we were always told that we weren't going to be involved and it wasn't going to impact upon us other than we'd lose a little bit of our car park. And we didn't mind that. So we weren't sort of prepared for what happened when we got it compulsorily acquired. What it meant was we then had to try and find a new place. Now, that new place wasn't forthcoming, and as such, we started looking at pie-in-the-sky type options, and one of them was that we have a new building. We built our own clubhouse. And ultimately, that's what has happened. That's what's transpired with the compensation that we actually got from the government and some of our own money as well that we'd saved over the years. What happened is we've now got a clubhouse, which is very nearing completion, and we should hopefully be in within about 2 weeks. So, yeah, we've got a new building. It's going to be called the Yerbury Centre. The reason it's being named the Yerbury Centre is after a guy called Captain Ian Yerbury. He was actually in the Army. He was an artillery officer. When he got out of the Army, he lived at Campsie in New South Wales until his death. But his mother and father lived here in South Australia. What happened was his father passed away and he'd passed away and his mother chose us to donate some money to us. She donated $25,000 to the Federation with the stipulation, and her words were, that the doors never close or the doors remain open, something to that along those lines anyway. And so what we did was we invested that in an investment account, you know, in case we ever had to move. We thought that was in keeping with her wishes, and it very much came to the fore when we had to move. So the new building is going to be called the Yerbury Centre, after Impy, as his nickname was. His actual initials were I-M-P-Y, and that's why he had the nickname of Impy. So his name is going to be on the building. It's just a thank you for his service, and a lot of guys served with him, that's the other thing. And his parents and his mother in particular, who donated that money to us, because without that we wouldn't have been able to finish off the building. Simple as that.
And so, the location of this new building?
31 to 39 Norfolk Road, Marion. It's adjacent to the RSL. We have had no end of support from the RSL and the City of Marion in relation to this build. They have been ever so great, and anything we've asked, they've just said, yes, not a problem, we can do that. It's just been absolutely amazing. They've lent us their club rooms to have our monthly barbecues, so we didn't have to go somewhere else, and they've been so, so good to us. I think in Australia, I don't know for certain, but I think that we are the only Vietnam ESO, Vietnam ex-service organisation, that is co-located with an RSL. What has happened is that we have mended quite a few barriers some of our members had because of the way they were treated when they first came back by the RSL. So that has turned the corner. And one of the reasons for that is the friendliness and the really great people down at the Marion RSL. They've done a fantastic job to mend those bridges. And some of our guys who vowed and declared they would never go down to the RSL are now down there. One of the major detractors has put up his hand and gone on the committee.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, it's a complete turnaround. I think that's an amazing turnaround from the thoughts that a lot of people had.
Good to see that communication open and going strong.
Certainly is. And we wouldn't have been able to do what we've done without their help.
Are you having a big opening ceremony when the building is finished?
Yes, we certainly are. We have our Christmas lunch on the 14th of December, and we're going to have the official opening at 2 p.m. on that day. The governor will be in attendance. He will be doing the opening. He's our patron. He's going to open the building for us, and we'll have the mayor at Marion and other politicians there as well. Who's actually going to be there? We don't know yet, because diaries and that time of the year is the mad season. At this stage, we look like having the premier and some other local ministers and national representative. Yes, the War Widows Guild will be there. There'll be the RSL representatives. We'll have nearly all the ESOs, including Vietnamese veterans as well. We have a very close association with the Vietnamese veterans. We go to a lot of their functions and they come to ours. We have a good working relationship with those guys as well.
You have a good working relationship with the Partners of Veterans Association too, don't you?
We do, yes. In the old place, we had a room there that they stored all their equipment in. We didn't charge anything for it. It was just something that they could use and put their barbecue stuff and whatever they had in there and store. Unfortunately, that had to go. We haven't really got any room at this stage in the new place because room is a little bit shorter. Our footprint's marginally smaller than it was at Warradale. So we don't have all the outside space and the outside sheds. We do have some sheds. We have one for storage and one for the glass fusion and the lead lighting people. That's the two sheds that we have. But we may be able to petition a piece of that area for the ladies to have their storage there, if we can.
Mal, do you have a website if people want to look it up and attend some of your events?
Yes, we have a website. We're having problems with our website. We previously paid for a site, and we want to change it to another company that does it. And we've had no end of problems. We have a website, yes, but unfortunately we haven't been maintaining it simply because we want to change it completely to another company that does it. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to get the permission of these original owners to allow us to do that. And that's been our major problem at the moment with our website. We do have a Facebook site. Our main functions are the monthly barbecue. We have a monthly barbecue on the second Friday of every month, and that's pretty much it. We have the two or three other functions during the year, but that's really all. That's really our main functions. The rest is just simply social. The sewing group, the quilting group, the lead lighting. We have a veterans off-road group. The veterans off-road group, it was a four-wheel drive club, basically. They used to go to a place up near Alawoona. Just happened to live there years ago in my youth. I was born in Taylor Bend, but my parents were in the railways, and it was a railway town, Alawoona. My dad was working, and that's why I lived there for some time. It's interesting that they spoke to a local farmer who I used to go to school with and who also boarded with us when he came down here to do intermediate at Brighton High, Don Viney. He and his wife got a property up there and they gave us 15 acres of land. And they've signed it over to us on a 50-year lease for, you know, peppercorn rent, $1 a year, and they won't accept any money for it. And they've helped us no end. We've got a memorial site there for people who want to reflect on anything they want. We have a camp kitchen up there. We have toilets, showers, generators. We have solar panels as well. So it's quite an interesting place. People can go up there and stay. It's not as if it's a huge impost on the pocket. It's $5 a night, an honor system. So you really can't go past it. It's not got all the bells and whistles. It's got running water, but it doesn't have power sites or anything like that. You need your own power for your caravan or whatever you're going to use up there. It's an interesting place and one of the many things that we do.
If a veteran and family want to go up there, they just contact the Federation?
Yes, they just have to contact the Federation on 8296-2411 and they can arrange the time, tell them where the keys are and how to go about getting a key for all the facilities.
Sounds fabulous. Now, a couple of the Federation members also have a radio program.
Yes, it's called Vets on Air and it's run by Gilly or John Gilman and Robin Carvins. Gilly's one of our pension officers, advocates, and Robin is our treasurer. They've been doing that show now for some time and they grab people from all sorts of persuasions and different things, but usually something to do with veterans or veterans' problems, and they have people on there. It's a music, have a request show for people that want to request something for somebody. They give the weather for every site where there's Australians based overseas. They do all sorts of things. It can be quite interesting at times and other times probably not, but I just like the music that they play. They select some great music on that show and they advertise all our functions and things on there.
Fantastic. And that's on Coast FM 88.7 and it's a great show. They do such a good job.
Yeah, they do. And I think we get a lot of comments about our radio show and it's really good to see. And it's one of those things that was started initially by the vets wanting to put something on air about themselves and to help advertise functions that were coming up. So it's worked out really well. And they've now been doing it. I think it's in excess of 500 shows now they've done. It's been going for a long time.
Mal Tierley, it's been lovely chatting with you today about your background, about the Vietnam Veterans Federation and about life in general for a veteran after Defence Force. Thank you for coming on air.
You're welcome.